today I'm in Glasgow, which is very windy, so you'll hear that on the recording, with David Miller, who I've not seen for a very long time, but it's lovely to be here. So David, where did we first meet?
I was trying to think about this on the way down to the meeting, and I can't remember where the first place we met was. I can remember when it was, roughly, so it must be about... must have been about 89 when we were students, but yeah. I can't actually remember where exactly it was. Can you remember exactly where it was?
No. Did you go to the Christian Union house party?
If I did, I can't remember it.
I guess I knew a lot of mathematicians, and were you doing maths alongside your physics?
Yes, that's right.
So we will have met through the mathematicians, because I did computer science in first year, which is how I kind
of...
I got to know the mathematicians.
Right.
And it's also why I think I'm not very good at maths. It wasn't until I was 40 that I realised that I felt I wasn't very good at maths, because all my friends who were very good at maths were actually exceptionally good at maths.
Right.
So, yeah. Do you drink tea?
I do. I do like tea. Possibly have a preference for coffee. That might be a bit heretical, but...
No, that's fine. That's fine.
But no, I do enjoy a cup of tea as well.
And do you have a favourite cup of tea, either time of day or type of tea?
So if I'm drinking tea, then it's probably going to be late afternoon-ish. So I would tend to drink coffee in the morning, and tea being more refreshing, I would have it in the afternoon. And I have... Well, my wife drinks much more tea than me. She doesn't like coffee, so she is always drinking tea, and we've had to try and cut her back on the amount of tea she drinks, because she drinks huge amounts of tea. And she particularly likes tea bags called Tea Pigs tea.
Oh,
it's
okay.
English breakfast tea pigs. And so I've been turned towards that a little bit.
I'm trying to remember where... Oh, really good gale noises now. I'm trying to remember where I had a really good cup of Tea Pigs tea on this project. I will remember at some point. So how do you respond to the statement, Christianity in the UK is not dying but sleeping?
I think I would disagree with both terms. I think I would disagree with dying and I would disagree with sleeping. I think there's been a cultural shift in our country, away from Christianity as a default position. So I don't think Christianity is in any way sleeping or in any way dying. I think it's actually thriving, but it just looks like it's dying or sleeping because of the way we label people as Christians or not Christians. I think 30 years ago, if you ask someone in the street whether they're a Christian or not, they might say, have said yes, because they were a cultural Christian. They were someone who has grown up in a Christian family, identifies with being a Christian, thinks of a Christian as being someone basically in the West. Whereas now that's gone, and I would say that people are, if you ask someone whether they're a Christian or not, they might even not want to admit it if they are.
Right.
So I think what's happening with churches is you're seeing people not go who weren't only cultural Christians before. They were not people who really identified with being a Christian in the spiritual sense, but only identified with being a Christian in the cultural sense. And I think what's being left behind is a core of people who are a bit more, placing their identity in the spiritual idea of being a Christian.
That's really interesting. I am not sure, because I've not been living in Scotland for a long time, whether there's still a difference between Scotland and England in that kind of identity of Christianity. I don't know. What used to surprise me in Scotland was that more people would belong to the Church of Scotland and be on the electoral roll than ever went to church, whereas in England it was always slightly different way round. Yeah, I don't know.
I mean, it's a very hard thing to judge, because you can't say to someone, you're not a real Christian somehow.
Mm.
You have a sort of no true Scotsman fallacy. But but I definitely see a tendency towards people who are going to church being people who allow Christianity and Jesus to have a much bigger impact on their lives than ever before.
Mm.
So I would say it's more of a concentration of Christianity.
Right.
We're concentrating it.
That's interesting. Lots of other people have talked about that as well. So you get the standard physicist question because you are a theoretical physicist.
I am indeed.
I have to ask, do you watch The Big Bang Theory?
I have never watched a single episode of The Big Bang Theory.
Okay, because a couple of years ago I got in touch with you with a physics question and you started your response, this is an engineer's reply and I'm a theoretical physicist and we would do this, and there's a big battle between engineers and theoretical physicists in Big Bang Theory, so I had to then stop and laugh for a few minutes before I got on with reading the answer. So I was at a meeting in January where Brian Cox was speaking and he talked about this, and it was a completely secular meeting, so I was a bit surprised, but he did. So Brian Cox quotes George, now am I going to get this right, George Lemaitre. Is that right?
That's probably as close as I would get.
There are two paths to truth, and I choose to take them both. And he said that in response to Einstein questioning him about the apparent science and faith paradox. What do you think the fact that he talked about that in a secular meeting shows about the UK today?
Well, I actually heard his interview, and I think I agree with quite a lot of what he said. I mean, I know Brian, mm-hmm. not terribly well. I know him well enough to say hi to.
Okay.
So I know him on that level. And he's a lovely chap. I would say, so I'm actually on the Gifford Committee, or I was on the Gifford Committee, I've just stepped down off it now, which was a committee which would put forward and support lectures in what we would call natural theology. So this was where you have some natural revelation. So you would find out about God through looking at the world. So, you know, one can think of there being divine revelation, as in reading your Bible, praying and so on. You get to find out about God in that way, but also have a sort of a second path of natural revelation where you find out about God by looking at the world around you. And I think actually both of these are incredibly important for finding out about yourself and about God, to be honest. And I've always thought of Lemaitre's response in that vein.
Mm-hmm.
So that there's a tendency for us to think of the divine revelation as being the sort of religious part, and then the natural revelation as being the science part. But actually, I think that the natural revelation is also a sort of religious part too, because one can have this revelation of God through looking at the world around us. And I think that is at the heart of how I see things, because when I look at the universe, I'm filled with wonder and amazement at it. I mean, well, that's one of the things that Brian Cox is, of course, famous for, is always telling us how amazing everything is, and being filled with wonder when he looks at the stars, and I'm like that too. I mean, I really do feel the presence of God when I do science.
That is great for me to hear, because, of course, I did the opposite from you, in that you looked up and I looked down, because
yeah.
I was a biochemist, so I was looking into the creation whilst you were looking out towards the edges of the creation. And that kind of is very much what I felt as a biochemist. You'd find something out about a molecule that was just amazing, and you'd like go, wow, I never knew that could work. I mean, hydrogen bonding is, and the way that hydrogen bonding works in biochemistry is a classic example of that for me. Next question. Now, I was quite interested by this Justin Brierley, who I interviewed way back, and who does a lot of work with he's a premier Christian radio presenter. He said that he thought more physicists than biologists were Christians. And I just wondered whether that's your experience.
Well, it's a hard question to answer because you can only answer it from your own perspective. So I'm not a biochemist, so I can't get into the mind of a biochemist. And of course, I see many more physicists than I do biochemists.
Mm.
So I have a very skewed sample set.
Yes.
I would probably agree, though.
Right.
And I think, well, certainly from my point of view, like I was saying before, when I look at these enormous structures in the universe, there's a certain majesty to that that evokes God. But also, I think in mathematical patterns.
Mm-hmm.
So if you look at the way that the laws are expressed mathematically, it's amazingly elegant. So if we look at something like the Standard Model or just quantum field theory generally, it's these are amazingly elegant theories that are based on symmetries, and you kind of feel that must be a reason for that order. Of course, that's a completely personal thing. I mean, there's absolutely nothing in the physics that I study which couldn't just be there from a natural universe point of view. So it's not in any way evidence, but you get that. I certainly get that feeling from it the more I study, the more I learn about the universe, the more it reinforces my belief in God rather than denies it. And I think I would probably have been the same if I had been a biochemist. I don't imagine that I would have looked at things like the chemicals of life and so on, and not felt the same way. But of course, I don't know that because I've never been a biochemist.
Maybe at some point we should do some proper research on this question.
Yeah.
I wonder what sets we were to choose. And I wonder who would fund it. Sometimes I wonder these questions and I have to put them to one side. But I thought it was really interesting. Justin felt it was because the physicists were looking at bigger pictures and biologists became very focused. But I'm not sure. I asked Justin about multiverses, whether Christians could believe in multiverses. Is that something that you've ever thought about?
A little bit. Actually, I was having a discussion. I run a house group where people come to my house on a Wednesday night, so we had one yesterday, and we discuss various topics. And I did bore them a few weeks ago by asking their opinions on whether or not you could be a Christian and believe in the multiverse. And I went to far too great depth to explain quantum mechanically how this would come about. But I don't see why not. Because we already have to, as Christians, we have to accept the idea that there might be other planets out there that are perfectly Earth-like and have life on them and so on. So therefore, we have to already accept the idea of there being different, quite separated realms of existence. And actually, that probably isn't so different from how much earlier Christians looked at the world, because they, you know, had Christianity or whatever in their own country, and they could see, you know, tribes in South America and so on who had never encountered Christ before, and how could they be brought into the fold? Different universes, if you like, for them as well.
Yeah, I had a discussion with someone about this once, and he was very much, well, yes, and they may well have their own salvation story, but that's not our concern. Our concern is here. He was very much kind of, actually, don't spend too long thinking about that necessarily whilst there's so much to do and to tell our own story of faith here. He was kind of quite focused on that.
Well, I would say a bigger challenge to the sort of multiverse idea, or a bigger challenge within the multiverse idea, is the concept of identity. So if you were to take the sort of many worlds interpretation of quantum mechanics, then you have your wave function splitting off into orthogonal directions, where you as a person somehow exist in these many universes. So it's not really a separation of you, because it's just that your wave function has become moved into separate parts. So in some sense you are still, you know, it becomes difficult to define what you is, whether you're just a part of that wave function or you're still the whole wave function. But does that mean that you are responsible for your actions in the other universe where things have gone completely differently as well? And that's a slightly more difficult thing for me to get my head around, I think.
Mm.
What does it mean to be you if you are spread over multiple universes?
My head hurts now, David. I shall think about that for a bit. The next question is much more prosaic. Is what's the best thing about Glasgow?
So I think the best thing about Glasgow is undeniably the people. I think it's a great city generally as well. I mean, there's lots to do here. It's a very living city. It's a very alive city. And we're sitting in the West End, which is very pleasant and very leafy and simply a nice place to live. But I think it's really the people. If you ever... One of my first impressions of Glasgow was just stopping to ask people in the street for directions, because, you know, when I first came here, it wasn't the time when you had Google Maps in your pocket, so you might get a bit lost and want to ask someone for directions. Everyone was so friendly; they would go out of their way to help you find where you needed to go. If you stopped and opened a map in the street, you would have three or four people around you offering to help, sending you where you wanted to go. And that's completely unlike many other cities I've lived in, where I won't mention names of cities, but where you might ask someone for directions and they'll purposefully turn away from you and refuse to help.
Mm.
And it's definitely the people that make Glasgow.
So our roundup question is, what's your favourite thing beginning with T?
Right, so... you gave me these in advance, these questions.
Yes.
So I have had a little bit of time to think about this. I hope it's not something that a lot of people have already said, but I'm going to go with time. Has anyone said that before?
A few people have, but I'd be interested in what your definition of time is in that setting.
Well, of course, there's a number of different reasons for this. The probably the most obvious reason is that I'm a particle physicist. And time is very important to particle physics, or rather space-time, because we like to think of space and time as really the same thing. So, you know, if we're talking about things like quantum gravity, or just gravity generally, then you have theories like general relativity, where time plays a very important role. And then you have quantum mechanics, where we're always interested in time evolution. So time is great from a physics point of view. But also, I think time is probably our most valuable commodity. So I think many of us nowadays seem to be a bit time poor. So we spend our lives running around trying to accomplish lots of great things, and we find ourselves not really having any time left to just sit and contemplate and to appreciate the world around us and appreciate the people around us. So I would one thing I'd like to have more of is time.
No one so far has answered that from a particle physicist point of view, but quite a few people have said that they'd like a bit more time to appreciate the people around them.
Yeah.
That's a lovely summary of what they've been saying, actually. So David, thank you very much for seeing me today.
It's been great to see you again.
It's been lovely.